Before we begin, wave them proudly.
And if you hear people shouting praise, and go ahead and join in.
And please keep the center aisle clear.
Because we got a king coming through.
Welcome
to Jerusalem. Shortly before the Passover celebration, Jesus and his disciples traveled to the city of Jerusalem. Does anyone know what Passover celebrates? Passover reminds God's people of the time in Egypt when the angel of death passed over their homes because of the blood of the lamb was painted on their doors. That lamb saved them from death, but this Passover was going to be different.
Everyone's coming to Jerusalem. Something big is about to happen.
The people were watching, waiting, hoping. This time, Jesus was the lamb.
As they came close to Jerusalem, Jesus sent two of his disciples ahead.
The disciples brought the donkey to Jesus. They didn't have a saddle, so they placed their coats on its back.
Jesus wasn't coming as a warrior king. He was coming as a peaceful king.
Then Jesus climbed onto the donkey. And something amazing began to happen.
Everyone, get ready.
The king is coming.
When I say boys, I want you to shout, "Blessed is the King who comes in the name of the Lord." When I say girls, shout, "Hosanna to the Son of David."
When I say boys, I want you to shout, "Blessed is the King who comes in the name of the Lord." When I say girls, shout, "Hosanna to the Son of David."
The city was buzzing. People asked, "Who is this?"
He healed a sick.
Jesus, the King.
The Bible tells us exactly what the people shouted that day. Blessed is the King who comes in the name of the Lord. Peace in heaven and glory in the highest. Let's say it together like we really mean it.
Our King, and when the King is here, praise overflows.
Let's say God's words together.
Blessed is the King.
Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord.
Who comes in the name of the Lord.
Who comes in the name of the Lord.
Peace in heaven.
Peace in heaven.
And glory in the highest.
And glory in the highest.
Stand up and worship with us.
Stand up and worship us.
And all hail King Jesus. And all hail the Lord of heaven and earth. All hail King Jesus. And all hail the Savior of the world. All hail King Jesus. And all hail the And all hail the Lord of heaven and earth. All hail King Jesus. And all hail the Savior of the world. The Savior of the world.
Let's sing it out. There was a moment.
Had claimed its victory. The King of love had given up his life. The darkest day in history. There on a cross they made for sinners. For every curse his blood atoned. When final breath ended was finished, but not the end we could know. For the earth began to shake, and the veil was torn. What sacrifice was made as the head.
was a moment when the sky lit up. Come on.
There was a moment when the sky lit up. A flash of light breaking through. When all was lost across eternity.
Yeah.
The King of Life was on the move.
Let's say thanks to the kids one more time. Very good. Go ahead and have a seat if you're in the room here. If you are a kid here still, you are welcome. There's Lisa right back there. There you go, that direction. So if you're still sitting down, you kids, you can go that way and head to your room. For the rest of the service. Thanks for being in here. Man, that was a great way to start Palm Sunday. Yeah, it really was. If you're new here, my name is Craig. I am the Discipleship and Next Steps pastor here. And man, I would love to help you make a connection here at Mountain View Christian Church. It is Palm Sunday, which means next Sunday is Easter, which means that this is Holy Week. And we have a devotional that you can connect with this week that will come out every day just to help walk you through the week as we prepare for all of the events that happen in Jesus's life and in Jerusalem, culminating in our celebration next Sunday. And so if you want to, you can sign up for that and just be looking out. That email will come out on a daily basis for you to be able to enjoy throughout the week. If you're new to Mountain View, boy, today would be a great day to say hello. And so there is a tall red card in front of you if you are in the room. It looks just like that. And it says Connect. And I would love for you to fill that out. I'll be back at the Next Steps table, and I would love to say hello today before you get out of here and let you know a little bit about Mountain View and let me know a little bit about you and how we can begin to help you connect in a greater way here to make Mountain View your home. All right? Thanks.
Well, good morning, y'all. Hey, I enjoy those moments because I see future preachers and church leaders in that group, and we're in good hands. I love it when they're loud and not shy, and there it was. So how many of you parents out there are thinking, oh, that's my kid? Yes, that's what happened. So, hey, we've been in this series called Breaking Points, and we're going to try to wrap that up a little bit today, but I want to make sure you're invited to our Good Friday gathering on Friday night. We join with River Hills. We'll be right here, and we're going to have our final breaking point as we look at the cross and what the cross means for us and what was accomplished, and particularly some obscure characters of the cross and what we can gain, what insight we can gain from them. And so I'm excited today because I've been warning you that there are these breaking points. And for some of you, maybe you've avoided the breaking point, or you think you've already achieved the breaking point. You've already been there. You've done that. But today is one of those that's a real challenge. And if you haven't had your breaking point in a matter of faith, then I told you it was only going to get harder as we go along. And today is one of those days, I think, because there are moments in life, I believe, when trying to stay neutral is no longer an option. And some of you might think, no, I want to stay as neutral as I can. And I prefer to stay neutral. If you know me, I like to harmonize. I like to keep everybody happy. And the hardest piece about being a harmonizer is actually creates unhappiness and disunity along the way, because you can't stay neutral forever. But all of us face moments in our life where we can no longer be neutral. For example, a diagnosis of some kind doesn't allow you to be neutral anymore. And if you've ever experienced somebody who's been diagnosed with cancer, neutrality isn't an option anymore. You can't pick it. You can't do it. When you've been betrayed, and some of you have experienced betrayal, betrayal doesn't allow you to stay neutral anymore. A crisis in your life will force you to choose a side, to make a decision, to go one way or another way. It's hard to stay neutral when you've been diagnosed with something, when there's been a crisis, or when you've been betrayed. And so we've been talking about these breaking points, the final week of Jesus's ministry and life before the crucifixion, and we've been spending several weeks on it. And in the final chapters of Luke, Jesus doesn't hold back. He doesn't hold back, and he forces people to make a decision about who he is. You have to decide. We have to decide. And so in our text today, we're watching one of the greatest breaking points, I believe, in history, not just for people in the first century, but really for all of humanity. And the big question, the big breaking point question that we are all faced with is this: what will I do with Jesus? Every one of us has to decide. We have to make a decision about what we're going to do with Jesus. If you're a follower of Jesus, you have to make that decision. If you're not a follower of Jesus, you have had to make some sort of decision about what we're going to do with Jesus. And different people respond in different ways, yet we all make a choice of some kind. And so by the end of our text today, the entire world, the religious world, the political world, the crowds, they are going to align, and they're going to align against Jesus. And there are two baffling truths, I believe, that come out of Luke chapter 23. The first truth is this. Luke indicates that Herod and Pilate became friends for the very first time that day. They had always been enemies before, but suddenly they're friends now. And second, the second baffling truth, I think, from Luke 23 is this, that they released, or Pilate released a man and surrendered Jesus to the will of the crowd. And if you were to sit in those two truths alone, I think you would experience a breaking point. Because the question is not just what they did with Jesus. The question is, what am I going to do with Jesus? When confronted with Jesus, nobody can maintain their neutrality anymore. Every person must decide who he is. And so we're going to move through this text together carefully. And I'm not going to preach like I normally do. We're going to look at one scene at a time. Every section, I think, confronts a different truth for us. And some of you might be thinking, oh, this would have been a great sermon for my non-Christian friends. I hate to tell you that the disciples were there too. And they had to decide what to do with Jesus. And some of us might even find a little offense to some of what I might say. It was really Luke's fault, not mine. And so be gentle with me along the way. But we are going to be forced to decide what each one of us is going to do with Jesus. So let's look. Luke chapter 22 is where we're going to start. Verse 63, it's a long chapter. It says this: Now the men who were holding Jesus in custody were mocking him as they beat him. And so Jesus has been arrested, if you remember. Peter cut off the guy's ear. Jesus healed the ear. Now he's been arrested, and the guards are there, and they are mocking Jesus. They are not just mocking Jesus. They are beating him up. And so they blindfolded him, and they kept asking him, "Prophesy, who is it that struck you?" And they said many other things against him, blaspheming him. So you got to picture this. Jesus has been blindfolded, and these guards are taking swings at him. And what they're saying is, huh, King of Kings, huh? The Son of God, huh? If you're so brilliant and so smart and you're God, then who just hit you? Can you imagine this scene? Can you picture it? Cruel and harsh, because Jesus has been arrested, he's been bound, he's now on display, he's vulnerable, and the soldiers begin to mock him by blindfolding him, striking him, and then telling him, "Why don't you tell us who just hit you?" But here's the deal, it's absolutely cruel, but it's not just cruel, it's dismissal. They are taking the Son of God and they are reducing him down to a joke. Why? Why are they reducing him down to a joke? Well, this is the truth that I think we can't ignore. And the truth is this: if Jesus is actually who he claims to be, then they're not in control. And how many of us like control? You didn't have to answer, but I appreciate the honesty. And so this is what happens, because when any of us are threatened by truth, you know how we respond? Don't ignore this, because we do this as humanity. We do this. When we're confronted with a truth, threatened by a truth, do you know what we do? We respond with mockery. Think of the things that make you uncomfortable. Think of the people who make you uncomfortable. Think of the truths that make you uncomfortable or threaten you or threaten something about you or somebody or something. What is it that we do? We make fun of it. We turn it into a joke. We mock it and we laugh about it. I mean, think about it. Is it not true? It's what we do. And it's what they did. And I think these three very short verses reveal what is true most of the time. And what is true most of the time is rejection is usually behind ridicule. They treat him as a joke instead of the king because mockery is a defense tool against truth. It is always easier to mock than it is to surrender. Always. And it's easier to laugh at Jesus and poke fun at Jesus and to make fun of Christians and to ridicule and complain and grumble about the church. It's easier to do those things than it is actually to bow down on our knees and declare Jesus King. And so we turn Jesus into a meme, a moral teacher, a cultural symbol, and we avoid making him king. And the problem is that we don't mock something we don't believe in or have already dismissed. Did you know that? We only mock something that unsettles us. We reduce Jesus down to something that we can manage, that we can control, and mockery reveals a heart that is actually resisting his authority. And so mockery isn't enough. Jesus doesn't go away. And so we shift away from the soldiers and look at this, verse 66. When day came, the assembly of the elders of the people gathered together, both chief priests and the scribes, and they led Jesus away to their council. And they said, "If you are the Christ, then tell us." But he said to them, "If I tell you, you will not believe, and if I ask you, you will not answer. But from now on, the Son of Man shall be seated at the right hand of the power of God." This did not go very well, by the way. And so they all said, "Are you the Son of God then?" And he said to them, "You say that I am." Then they said, "Well, what further testimony do we need? We've heard it ourselves from his own lips." And so Jesus is taken before the council of the elders. These are the religious elite. These are the experts of the law. And ironically, these are the very same people who historically should have recognized him as king from the get-go. And so they ask, "Are you the Son of God? Are you the Son of God?" And Jesus answers in a way that makes the truth unavoidable, does he not? And they respond. When they hear the truth, they respond, "We don't need any more testimony from you." They are not confused. They are not confused. They don't lack evidence. There's plenty of evidence. Instead, they've reached a breaking point right here. And instead of surrendering to the truth, what do? They reject the truth. And so are you ready for the truth we can't ignore? After the first one, I'm sure you're really open to the second. Here's the second truth, right here. The greatest barrier to faith is not a lack of evidence. It's resistance to the implications. We don't resist faith because we don't believe. We don't resist Jesus because we don't believe. We don't resist anything except for the implications if we do go all in. What do I mean by that? Well, if Jesus is the Son of God, then he has authority over us, right? And those of us who raised our hands about the control issues, This is hard, right? And so it means that we must surrender, we must submit to him. And so the religious authority, the elite, the experts of the law, if they acknowledge this truth, even with all of the evidence that they already have, what they're most concerned about are the implications, because this changes everything, and it changes their lives, it changes the system, it changes their religion, it changes their families, it changes the way they work. Literally, Jesus will change and influence everything about their lives. And so they reject Jesus because of the implications, not because of the truth. They don't want that. And we don't either. One of the reasons that we resist Jesus is because if I actually let Jesus in, I know what he's going to change. And I don't want him to. I know what he's going to ask me to let go of. And I don't want to. I know what he's going to ask me to do in the reprioritization of the things in my life, and that's not what I want. And we all do this. So today, it's not that people haven't heard about Jesus. People have heard about Jesus. Trust me, Jesus is being proclaimed. It's actually that they understand enough to know it's going to cost them something. We like to know a lot of information about Jesus. Trust me, we love information about Jesus. But I want to know enough about Jesus to know that if I actually surrender to him, if I actually bow down to him, if I actually declare him the king of my life, I know it's going to cost me something. So instead of surrendering, we reject him. Don't answer. Don't answer. But how many of you fit into this category today? How many of you like Jesus, but you're just not ready to make him king because you know what it's going to cost? Or how many of us are holding on to control of our own life instead of truly surrendering because we know what he's going to ask us to do? And so we avoid it. We like Jesus, we know about Jesus. We want to be close enough as we possibly can to Jesus, but many of us have not surrendered and declared Jesus king because we know what it will require of us. And so we have the soldiers, we have the religious elite, and now Jesus is going to talk to the government. How do you think that's going to go for him? It's not rejection, it's avoidance. Look at this, verse 1 of chapter 23. Then the whole company of them arose, and they brought him before Pilate. Mind you, the religious elite couldn't stand Pilate, all right? And they began to accuse him, saying, "We found this man misleading our nation and forbidding us to give tribute to Caesar, and saying that he himself is a Christ, a king." And so Pilate asked him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" And he answered him, "You have said so." And then Pilate said to the chief priests and the crowd, "I find no guilt in this man." But they were urgent, saying, "He stirs up the people, teaching throughout all Judea from Galilee to this place." Did you catch it? Pilate says, "He's innocent. He's not guilty. Why are you making such a big deal out of this? What's going on anyway?" Carry on, verse 6. And so when Pilate heard this, he asked whether the man was Galilean. And when he learned that he belonged to Herod's jurisdiction, whew, Pilate's thinking, "I'm going to escape this one." He sent him over to Herod, who was himself in Jerusalem at the time. And when Herod saw Jesus, he was very glad, for he had long desired to see him because he had heard about him, and he was hoping to see some sign done by him. If you know anything about Herod, Herod had a craving for entertainment. And so he was excited to finally meet this guy. Not because he's a king, not because he's God's son, not because he was the promised Messiah, but because he could do tricks and miracles, magic. And Herod had long wanted to see him do that. And so it goes, so he questioned him at some length, but Jesus made no answer. And so the chief priests and the scribes, they stood vehemently accusing him, and Herod with his soldiers treated him with contempt, and they mocked him, and then arrayed him in a splendid clothing, dressed him up like a king. I'm not going to deal with it. I'm going to send him back to Pilate. And here it is. Here's one, I think, one of the most cringiest verses in chapter 23. And Herod and Pilate became friends with each other that day, for before this, they had been in enmity with each other. And so Jesus is taken to Pilate, and Pilate examines him, and Pilate listens and then declares that he finds no guilt in him at all, that should be the end of it. It should be over, but it's not. So truth does not guarantee courage, by the way. Did you hear that? Truth does not guarantee courage. And so Pilate is worried, and Pilate's worried about a riot. He's already, according to other writers, he's already on thin ice anyway, and he doesn't want any trouble. And so he's like, I can escape this whole problem. I'm going to send you on to Herod. Let Herod deal with this. And Herod is curious, but Herod is not convicted. Herod wants entertainment. He's not looking for truth. And when Jesus doesn't perform any miracles, Herod mocks him, dresses him up like a king, and sends him back to Pilate and says, he's your problem. And then we get that most interesting verse in verse 23, that they become friends. Enemies become allies over shared rejection of Jesus. It's wild. The world will unite around a lot of things. And one of the strongest things that the world will unite around is their opposition to Jesus. People that we don't agree with, people we don't even like, people that we won't even associate with, if they share the same opinion and views and perspectives of Jesus as they do, it's amazing the barriers that can be broken. You ready for the truth we can't ignore? This is the third, if you're keeping count. Avoidance feels safer than rejection. When we have to decide what we're going to do with Jesus, it's a lot easier to avoid the topic than it is to blatantly reject him. And what matters of faith? What matters of faith do you and I actually avoid so that we don't have to blatantly and bluntly reject it? What matters of faith do we avoid so that we don't have to just say, nah? Avoidance is still a decision. Did you know that? That's a curse for somebody who likes harmony. Because to avoid something is still making a decision. And so Pilate tries to be neutral. Herod wants entertainment. And so neither Pilate or Herod can actually escape the question. And we can't escape the question either. And so now the moment reaches its peak. The soldiers have been confronted. The religious elite have been confronted. The politicians have been confronted. And yet now we're going to have the climax confrontation with the crowd. And if we haven't decided what we will do with Jesus, this is a break point, and it's unavoidable. Here it is, verse 13. Pilate then called together the chief priests. He called together the rulers and the people, and he said to them, you brought me this man as one who was misleading the people, and after examining him and before you, behold, I do not find this man guilty of any of the charges that you have against him. And neither did Herod, for he sent him back to us. You see how he threw Herod in there? Look, nothing deserving death has been done by him. He doesn't deserve death. I find him innocent. So I'm going to punish him, which would require a beating and some terrible things, some brutal stuff. And I'm going to release him. But look at verse 18. But they all cried out together, away with this man. Away with this man, and release to us Barabbas. And Barabbas, a man who had been thrown into prison for an insurrection started in the city and for murder, by the way. And so Pilate addressed them once more, desiring to release Jesus, but they kept shouting, crucify, crucify him. And a third time he said to them, "Why? What evil has he done? I find in him no guilt that deserves death. I will therefore punish and release him." But they were urgent, demanding with loud cries that he should be crucified. And their voices prevailed, so Pilate decided that their demand should be granted. And he released the man who had been thrown into prison for insurrection and murder, for whom they asked. But he delivered Jesus over to their will. And so Pilate gathers the people together, and he declares, "I have found no guilt in this man." Jesus declares that he is innocent. Three times Pilate declares that Jesus is not guilty, that he is innocent, and yet the crowd continued to shout, "Crucify him, crucify him," and then comes the most shocking and surprising exchange. Barabbas, a man guilty of insurrection, a man guilty of murder, is offered alongside Jesus. One of them will be free. One of them will be declared innocent. One of them will have all their charges dropped against them. And the people choose Barabbas, not Jesus. You ready for the truth we can't ignore? This right here is humanity exposed. It exposes everything. Given the choice between innocence and guilt, and given the choice between righteousness and rebellion, given the choice between Jesus and Barabbas, they choose rebellion. Why? Why? Here's the truth. Because Barabbas represents freedom without submission. Let that sit for a second. It's highly offensive. A lot of us follow Jesus because we want freedom. A lot of us get close enough to Jesus because we want freedom. A lot of us claim we love Jesus and we serve Jesus because we want freedom. But unfortunately, a lot of us want freedom without submission. And Jesus represents a king they must obey. And they would rather have a guilty man who lets them live how they want instead of a righteous king who calls them to be transformed. That's what they want. And so this is not just their story. This is actually our story too, because every time we choose sin over obedience, when we choose self over surrender, and when we choose control over Jesus, we actually choose freedom without submission. And what bothers me the most about these verses is the revelation that the crowd chooses what it really actually loves. And you and I choose usually what we actually love too. And so eventually, what's in our hearts is always made public. You can't contain it forever. I can't hide it. You can't hide it. What's really in us, it oozes out eventually. Sit with a person. Listen to what they mock. Listen to what they control. Listen to the ridicule that spews out of their mouth about any given environment or situation. It reveals what's really in their heart and what they love most. It does. You can't contain it. And so I want to ask us again, what will I do with Jesus? What will you do with Jesus? The soldiers mock him. The religious elite, they reject him. And Pilate avoids him. Herod trivializes him. And the crowd replaces him. And all have different responses. And yet there's one common reality. None of them can ignore him. None of them can stay neutral. And I would argue that you can't either. We cannot avoid him, and we cannot stay neutral about him. Every one of us faces the inevitable decision, and I believe this is the breaking point. The world aligns itself against Jesus. Enemies become friends with those who reject Jesus, and the guilty are freed while the innocent are condemned again and again and again. And I am in this chapter. And I would argue that you're in this chapter also. We don't get to just be spectators. We are a participant. And at some point, every life reaches a breaking point, and we have to decide what we're actually going to do with Jesus. And I warned you for 4 weeks that this was going to get harder along the way. And so let me ask you, will you mock him? Will you dismiss him? Will you avoid him? Will you reject him? Will you replace him? Or will you actually recognize him for who he is and who he says he is, who he has proven to be, and surrender your life to him as king? At the breaking point, everyone must decide. What am I doing with Jesus? And I think this is the deeper point behind this passage. The innocent one, Jesus, is condemned so the guilty can go free. Man, isn't that wild? When we read Luke 23, something in us should be unsettled. This is not right. And yet the wild truth, the deeper truth, is that the innocent one was condemned so the guilty could go free. Barabbas walks away alive, and Jesus takes his place. You fast forward that to 2026, I walk away free. Because Jesus took my place. You get to walk away alive because Jesus took your place. It's actually what makes communion so special. We don't come to the table as people who have it all figured out, who have life pieced together, who do everything perfectly. We actually come as people who see ourselves in Luke 23 as people in the crowd, people in silence, people in compromise, people with struggles, people with all sorts of issues, and yet Jesus goes to the cross anyway. Communion is where we remember that Jesus' body was broken instead of mine. Where Jesus' blood was poured out instead of mine. Like, that's the wild truth. You're alive, and he was crucified. You deserved it, I deserved it. He did not. Man, what are you going to do with Jesus? There's a table back here. There's one in the balcony. One back here and over here. And the bottom of the cup is a piece of bread, and the top cup is some juice, representing his body broken, his blood poured out. Eat it, drink it, and ask yourself, what will I do with Jesus? You're free to go.
Thank you.
over the next few minutes, you can continue to respond however the Spirit is inviting you to. And corporately together, we're gonna sing some praise songs. And so if you would stand, and we'll continue to respond in that way.
Grandeur earth is great before, moved by the sound of his voice. Seas that are shaken and stirred can be calmed and broken for my regard.
Still.
through it all, my eyes are on you. Through it all, it is well. Through it all, my eyes are on you, and it is well with me.
Light in the rose, mighty to save. Started this back in Christmas, we started this journey through the book of Luke, and we started with the arrival of Jesus in a manger. We talked about the way of Jesus, where we introduced these cards that are still available on these tables in the back for you to have action and do the way of Jesus. And then we talked about miracles. And then now we're in this point where we have a breaking point. We have a choice. And I think the choice is, what kingdom will you choose? Is it a kingdom of submission, surrender, and sacrifice? Or is it a kingdom of just self-control? That you control the narrative, not Jesus. And so which kingdom will you choose? That's what we're asking. This book of Luke has been great. It's been fun. It's been challenging. And so don't stop. Keep challenging yourself. Ask yourself the question, which one will you choose? And I just want to continue to encourage you. Our stories aren't over. They continue every single day. And so if you have not shared our story with us, it's your opportunity to do so. And so please share your story. God's great, God is good, and he's doing something if you allow him. And so, just an extra reminder, grab one of these cards. We want to know, and we want to see what God will do when you choose to say yes. And so, there's your takeaway. Pretty easy, right? Maybe not. Not always, right? So, if you're new with us, actually before that, Good Friday, it's coming. It's this Friday. And so we want to invite you to come to Good Friday service at 6:30 here with River Hills. Come join us, where we just get to look at that breaking point that Jesus hit on that night. And then we get to come back on Sunday and celebrate Easter. Woohoo! Bring all your friends, invite your neighbors. There's somebody at a grocery store that's waiting for you to say hello and create that invite. And so do that this Friday and Sunday. And then if you are new with us, there is some cards in the back of the chairs. They're red, and they say connect on them. And so I just want to encourage you, grab a connect card, fill out that information, and then take it to our next steps table in the back on the right-hand side. Pastor Craig is going to be waiting there to say hello and welcome to Mountain View. And so thank you all for being here. Have a great rest of your Sunday.